Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio. And Katie had a big morning.
I did. I went to the Georgian Club because it was super fancy. I had some good bacon.
That's always important.
Yes, always important. And actually, it's today, or I guess last episode, so 2 weeks ago, was Corey Rick and the Long-Term Care Planning Company, their one-year anniversary with Tuesdays with Corey, their show here out of our studio.
And he spotlights women entrepreneurs.
He does.
Doing amazing things.
And they all are. And so it was a room full of them today. Got to meet them all. And it was a great way to celebrate 1 year and have all the former guests meet each other and be spotlighted in a pretty cool way.
And then, you know, last night, Stone and I, we were...
You guys are at GSU and you had a little bit of a kind of a TED Talk kind of thing.
A TED Talk for the GSU Society of Finance, where we talked about media and how to leverage media and the importance of all of those students to really embrace the media. And they actually are their own media in today's world. Did you know that?
How so?
You're your own media.
I'm my own media. So every person is their own media. I guess if you have any kind of presence on social media.
Isn't that a
media
platform?
Yeah, that's true. So everything you have is out there.
You learn something new.
Every day.
Every day. Well, that's interesting, but not as interesting as what we got in store today.
Nope. I'm excited
for
this.
And you're a big tea person.
I am. I'm a huge tea person. I'm very excited.
So we're going to learn something about tea today.
Yes, we are.
Maybe. All right. First up on High Velocity Radio, we have Cal and Aria, and they are the, the brains behind Matcha Ghee. Welcome, gentlemen.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. Thanks.
So tell us about the world of matcha. That's tea-like, or is it actually tea? What's the rules of the game here?
Yeah, so matcha is essentially your typical green tea that's been ground stone into powder. So the difference is, where you're consuming regular tea, you're consuming 30% of the tea benefit. Matcha, you're consuming 100% because you're consuming 100% of the tea leaves.
So then you take the tea leaf and then you grind it up with the mortar and pestle type grinding?
What you would receive in front of you, it's already powderized. So the only thing you have to do, it's put it in a bottle, you shake it up, and you drink it. And it's a simple way to consume matcha. But traditionally, you would place the powder in a bowl. It's called a matcha bowl. And it comes with the whisk. You whisk it up, you put the hot water, and you sip it. And that is matcha.
Does it taste like tea? What's the flavor?
So it's... your typical green tea multiply by 10. So it's got the vegetal taste, and that's what we're going to be talking about. The high quality tea, it's going to have that vegetal taste, but it's going to taste great.
Cal, what's your take on this?
Yeah, no, I agree. So the difference, as already mentioned, the biggest difference is the potency, right? And so all the benefits you get from typical green tea, you're going to get a lot more of in matcha. So the process that it's prepared is slightly different as well. The traditional way to prepare matcha, as already mentioned, is in a bowl and whisk. So monks, samurais, they used to prepare this as a tea ceremony, right? That's very popular in Japanese culture.
So what are you, a monk or a samurai?
I think I'm more the monk. I like to be more in the meditative state.
And then, so how'd you get into this business?
Yeah, so met my co-founder here working at a Fortune 500 company, big company, just kind of, day in, day out, 9-to-5 kind of gig. And we wanted to kind of explore what our passions were, kind of develop that. And he actually was the one, Aria was the one who introduced me to matcha.
Wasn't you.
No.
Shocking. if you looked at it, the two of you.
Yeah, exactly. So I was kind of the more, the Americanized spin on it. So I was like, hey, let's try to bring this into America. And see what we can do with it. So
now, Aria, what was the thinking? And did you always want to get into this? Was a side hustle at first for you guys? You were like, hey, let's see if we can sell some matcha.
Right. So definitely, it was a side hustle. The idea behind it is I've always been passionate with tea, but I started out as going to school in college. I was also bartending in a restaurant. would always needed extra energy. I was consuming a lot of energy drinks, coffee, and eventually I experienced the crash, the moodiness out of it. And one day I was traveling to a Beaufort Highway and saw green tea matcha. And from that point on, I tried matcha, and it gave me the similar energy as energy drinks and coffee, but I didn't experience the crash because later I found out a lot of the benefits, the L-theanine and the chlorophyll really balances out and really prolongs the energy that, that's sustainable throughout the day.
And then how long does that caffeine buzz last with matcha?
About 5 to 6 hours, and it progressively go down instead of a sudden crash.
And then I've heard of a ton of health benefits of green tea. Are you getting all of those benefits as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And that depends on the quality of tea that you are drinking, right? And what we are serving here, it's called the ceremonial matcha, which is the highest grade of matcha. It does have a high content of chlorophyll, the L-theanine that we're talking about. And it's great for detoxification, definitely, since this, the higher grade has got 64 milligrams of caffeine per teaspoon.
Is that the serving size, a teaspoon?
Absolutely, a teaspoon. Half teaspoon, a teaspoon to start off with.
And then so you just take, you just scoop it out and then just put it in whatever drink you want?
Yeah, absolutely. So traditionally, kind of like what Cal and I were talking about, we put it in a bowl, put warm water to 270 degrees Fahrenheit, and you whisk it up and you sip it. That's the ancient way.
So it becomes a tea at that point.
It becomes a tea.
Like that's a traditional tea.
Right. We don't want to make it any more complicated than that.
Right. So that's pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that you can also just take a teaspoon and put it in a smoothie or do something like that, and then you're still getting the benefits, or does it have to be heated in order to get the benefits?
You'll get the benefit the same way.
So you'll get the caffeine, you'll get everything you want from an energy standpoint?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Heated or not heated?
That's correct.
Now, so what's your vision for the company?
So yeah, we want to bring in, again, with the energy drinks, with the downside of crashing and potentially a lot of the other ingredients in it that might not be healthy for you. The vision, it's to deliver a clean source of energy that gives you the sustainability of energy and also healthy for you.
So you're looking at this to be kind of you're going at the 5-hour energy and.
Right.
The Monster.
Right.
Like
exactly.
Those kind of drinks.
Right.
Yeah. Similar. So, and pre-workouts as well, I guess a lot of people, we want to kind of aim more towards the fitness, industry a little bit as well. Since a lot of these, pre-workouts, again, all these energy drinks have, you know, who knows what, right? I mean, you look at the back of some of these containers and you can't pronounce half the words. So with this, the only ingredient is matcha green tea.
And then is there a lot of calories in that, or what's the...
Zero calories. Calories.
It's no calories. Mm-hmm. So it's caffeine. I mean, it's calorie free, but it has a lot of caffeine. Mm-hmm. And then there's also antioxidant health benefits as well.
Absolutely.
Now, are you selling this primarily through e-commerce?
Yeah. So right now we're fully e-commerce. So we're trying to kind of exploit you guys mentioned the brand, you know, your personal brand and all like that at the beginning of the show. This is, you know, this day and age with social media, all like that. We want to try to spread the word through that platform, but also have kind of a grassroots, you know, promotion as well. So we do events, we do pop-ups, we partner with, you know, local gyms, F45, Orange Theory, gyms like that. We also do, you know, bigger festivals. We were a part of Japan Fest this year.
Oh, so were we.
Nice. Yeah. So we were there, which is a good market for us, right? Yeah. So, yeah. So we're trying to promote it grassroots.
But how do the more traditional tea drinkers look at this? Are they saying you respecting the product?
Yeah. Or, I think that was our goal was, you know, going back to kind of what you were asking about vision is, you know, providing a high quality matcha, right? So a lot of matcha that you see nowadays, whether it's on Amazon or wherever, it's going to be that lower quality. So we want to provide that high quality matcha, but still at an affordable price because matcha can get quite pricey the higher the grade. So we wanted to provide high grade matcha at an affordable price.
So now are you repping another brand or you created this brand and you had a manufacturer yourselves?
Yeah, so we this is private label. So we have farms over in Nishio, Japan. And then they provide us with what you see here in the 30-gram tin and the 100-gram bag.
And then you put your brand on it.
Correct.
And then you're marketing it here in America.
Correct.
Is it primarily America or you're selling it around the world?
Yeah. So we're starting here in America. Obviously that's kind of, again, our grassroots, aspect, but, Arya's, from Indonesia. So we're starting to branch into the Indonesian market. That's a pretty large market and they're typically following a lot of the same trends that, you see in America. They're slightly behind sometimes. So as Arya's, you know, seen before, you know, trends that you see in America typically take off shortly after in Indonesia as well.
Now, but you're targeting in your niche is fitness fanatics, like your trainers and gyms and people who are doing a lot of exercise, and you're selling it as kind of a pre-workout, post-workout drink.
Yeah, exactly. And so we want to, you know, provide that, you know, healthy alternative, to give you that energy and to perform your activity, whatever it may be, you know, lifting, running, you know, whatever kind of workout it is, give you that energy you need pre-workout or again, like you had mentioned, post-workout as well for recovery.
Now, are either one of you athletes? Like how did you choose that market?
Yeah. So that's kind of both of our backgrounds as well. I was an NCAA athlete, you know, Arya was, did a lot of weightlifting in his past and still tries to, right?
try to get it going.
Right. But, I do triathlons now as well. So I'm trying to, you know, I've always been kind of in that fitness area. So I enjoy that space. And as does Arya. So that's kind of our other, you know, passion as well.
So when you're selling it to a gym, like what's the process for that?
So we don't sell to gyms directly. Like we do pop-ups as of now. So we have, anytime they have events or classes or things like that, we'll kind of be there to provide the athletes with, you know, samples.
So you use it as a sampling opportunity?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
And then you sell directly to their members?
Correct. Yes.
And then, so they usually just let you do that and then you pick up their customers.
Yeah. And we try to do that. And then we also offer, you know, discounts to their customers as well, which
like
is
a special,
right?
Because
exactly.
You're part of Orange Theory. You get exactly. Special break.
Exactly.
And then, so how's that been? How's that going for you guys?
Good. Great.
Good,
and
yeah.
We've gotten a lot of good feedback. You know, we've started small, with the events, but we're trying to go bigger and bigger. Japan Fest was obviously a very large event, as you know. So, you know, being a part of those bigger events, there's a lot of festivals, a lot of, like markets, like, farmers markets that we want to be a part of as well. So, you know, we're kind of spreading our reach there as well, doing, you know, Alpharetta Farmers Market, you know, there's a Brookhaven Farmers Market. We're trying to get
but
to that
primary
area.
Sampling and then selling the bags and the tins directly to
exactly.
The consumer.
Correct. So we provide the samples. We make it a few different ways just so they can see the versatility. Mm-hmm. But then we obviously sell in the moment, obviously to the user at that time, or if they go on our website as well.
Yep. And then if they go on the website, they can order directly.
Correct.
From the website.
Yep.
Now, what was it like setting up an e-commerce website? Was that difficult? Or are you guys technical people? Like, or what was that process like?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a learning experience. But I guess the third part of, you know, the third one of my passions is technology. So I'm a software developer at heart, actually. So this is definitely a, you know, 180 from what I do normally. But setting up the e-commerce site was really fun. Definitely learning a lot of stuff about, you know, Google ads, Google tracking, all kinds of, you know, Facebook ads. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. And, you know, we're just now scratching the surface, but it's really exciting. Yeah.
So you're doing that and then you're drawing people to the website. Are they searching for matcha? Like, what is the search terms you're using to get the audience you need?
Yeah, we have a bunch of different search terms, you know, obviously like matcha green tea, powdered green tea. You know, mm-hmm. Some people don't know what it's called. That some people type it in wrong, mocha green, you know, like we have a couple search keywords that are not actually matcha, but we know what they mean. So yeah, we have a couple different keywords like that, Japanese green tea.
Now, are you at the point where it's a machine where you know that if I spend $100 in ads, I'm going to make $300 in sales?
So not yet. And that's funny you mentioned that. That's definitely what we've been experimenting with more now is trying to see, you know, what that ROI is. But we believe, I mean, there is so much ROI in that and it's, you know, the value of, e-commerce ads is, you know, like tenfold of what you pay for it typically. And so right. We're just starting to get into that space.
And then, how can we help? What do you need more of right now?
Just awareness. And I think that's what, you know, we're trying to do. That's one of our, you know, biggest, missions is to build this platform of what matcha is, what the benefits are, and why they should be drinking it. And you know, one of the things I like to say is, you know, our biggest competitor is coffee, right? And that's, you know,
because I would think it's nothing.
Well, not that it's nothing, yeah. But that you're like, well, why give up coffee when I have it, you know? But I like to tell people, as the founder of this company, I still drink coffee, and I'll be honest about it. I do both, right? And I think it's a great supplement you can add to your existing stack of whatever you're taking. I like to take it, you know, maybe more in the afternoon, like at 2 or 3. I don't need as much of, you know, that crazy rush that you get, and,
right.
I don't want to crash later on. So it's a great, you know, supplement I can add in.
So like in this is coffee. So I have a Yeti here that's filled with coffee. Like yeah, how much caffeine is in this typically?
So coffee, typically around 120 milligrams of caffeine. Now, when you drink Red Bull, one of those sugar free and then just a regular Red Bull, that's typically about 64, 65 milligrams of caffeine. That would be the equivalent of.
So I got to have two teaspoons?
No, one teaspoon.
To get equal this.
Yeah.
So I got to have two.
Right. But then again, keep in mind, the caffeine in green tea is going to be completely different than coffee. So the impact, while you're trying to match, you know, 1-to-1 with the caffeine content, but the effect with the 64 milligrams would be equivalent to around, you know, 100 milligrams of caffeine.
This is, I don't want to plug them, but this is a highly caffeinated coffee.
So then I don't know what you have in it. It's regular coffee,
but it's the most caffeinated regular coffee.
But since it is a powder, since matcha is a powder, you can, you know, regulate how much caffeine you have.
And then is it a strong flavor?
So it's got the vegetal taste to it. You know, like what we always tell people, it's the versatility, what you can do with matcha. And, you know, you hear a lot of, you know, detox juice and all of that. And it's the
beauty. It tastes like that green, like wheat grassy.
Yeah. I mean, we tell people, you know, if you like green tea, you'll probably enjoy it. If you don't like green tea, you're probably not going to enjoy it too much. You're going to think it tastes like grass.
But it's flexible enough that if I don't like green tea, but I like strawberry smoothies, I can just pour it in a strawberry smoothie and get the benefits of it.
Absolutely.
So if somebody wants to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
So the best way is going to be our website. Yeah. www.matchagi.com. Or on Instagram or Twitter.
At Matcha Gi.
Good stuff. Well, thank you both for sharing your story.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having us.
So can you hang with us? We've got one more set of guests.
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio, we got Matt Blackburn. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Lean in there, Matt. This is like a rock star. You got to get close like a rock star.
All right. We'll channel my inner rock star.
Are you on the air? So you're on the air too? Who are you?
Mousy McDaniel.
See, she wasn't on my sheet, Matt. You got to.
My bad.
You got to your PR people. Let's blame them.
Yep.
So tell us about Order. How are you serving folks?
So Order is a production company here in Atlanta. We are making feature-length films as well as commercial films. Order, our background is advertising, and which is why Mousy is joining us today. She is a client that we worked with in the past. We are positioning ourselves through commercial film to go directly to client, and Mousy is one that we've worked successfully with. And
so Mousy was the client.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
All right, Mousy, got to jump in here now. What is your business?
So I worked with Matt while I was at, and still am, with Tarquette Flooring. So he helped us bring our brands to life.
So you're a flooring company.
Yes.
And so you're selling, how are you selling, what marketing materials were you using pre-Matt?
A lot of the same that we were using post-Matt. We just like to think that they were improved once we started working.
What were you doing? You were shooting your own videos? You were online, Facebook ads?
Prior agencies. And we did videos. We did social. We had print collateral. Print's still alive in our industry.
So then you were just doing it in a more traditional way.
Right.
And then how'd you find Matt?
We actually met Matt through one of the large agencies that we were typically, you know, working with lots of layers in the organization, and found that we were more and more requesting to just have conversations directly with Matt and Asan, also part of Order Productions. So when they, you know, kind of split off from that agency and started their own, it was more of a way to just have that direct conversation without all the overhead that comes from typical large agencies that we would work with.
And then he's providing the service where that's where you want it anyway.
Exactly.
You didn't need all the infrastructure that the larger agency provided. Mm-hmm. So you just wanted the video content.
the creative content. So whatever that might be, if it's video or helping with, you know, understanding brand or bringing brand to life in many mm-hmm. different ways. So that could be through several different avenues, but certainly video is a strong asset.
And then in your business, is your product offering, is it a kind of a commodity offering where there's lots of choices that they all look kind of similar?
Sure, there's a component of that that's very commodity driven where everything kind of looks the same. We also have some very innovative solutions, and one of the more innovative that allows personalization and customization is one that we've worked with Matt on. So it's really about how you can bring someone else's personal brand to life through the floor.
Mm-hmm. And then Matt, the thing that you're bringing to the table as a filmmaker by trade is this storytelling and the ability to convey emotion into kind of a commodity-like product.
That's correct. But also understanding, you know, the story that they want to tell and how they want to position it, and making sure we're bringing the right emotions to life. So we take a pretty fundamental approach of understanding the brand's promise, understanding who tends to benefit from that promise, and then telling the story to bring those two things together.
So now, I'm sorry, Matt, sorry, I forgot, what's the name of the company again?
Tarkett.
So if you look at Tarkett and you met them for the first time, you saw their initial vision without you. And then how did you kind of inject yourself and your creativity into what they were doing to come up with kind of a new way?
The first thing that we always do is a discovery phase. Mm-hmm. And so we don't really focus too much on where they were, but just really want to understand where they want to go and really want to understand the emotion behind it. And one of the first meetings that we had, and Mousy reminded me of this, is we actually asked them to bring an object that reminded them or sort of painted the picture for the brand so that we could talk about the brand objectively and figure out what the brand really stands for.
So what object did they bring?
Mousy had a pair of shoes, I believe, is what she brought.
Aaron had the shoes, actually, but all of the people around the table brought their own.
Their own vision of how they saw it.
Of how they saw it. And so it was really interesting to kind of see.
So this was the first time for you?
It was the first time.
Right. So everybody was learning together, right?
That's right. That we had been through an experience like that. So it was really helpful, even for our executives, for our company, to see what each individual believes the brand represents.
Because everybody thought in their head, everybody was thinking similarly, but obviously it was a lot of disparate
right.
things.
Right. And then you can look at what we believe we bring to the table and right. who we want to be, who we believe our brand is, and how we've articulated that in the past. And you can start to see it's not always aligned, right? And so going through an experience like that, that felt very authentic versus a typical kind of
like
process map and
right.
whiteboard and what you would typically do with an right. agency, being able to kind of cut to the chase was really beneficial for
so
us.
So now, Matt, the concept of having them bring an object that symbolizes, that's to get them out of their own head and to think differently with
absolutely.
Product, right? Instead of just saying words or something, this forces them to kind of bring a three-dimensional item into the room.
Right. And something that, as Mousy said, represents how they see the company because right. or the brand, because a lot of times that vision is a little bit different.
It's misaligned sometimes.
Absolutely. More often than not.
And it's something that it might be even misaligned more and more over time. And then all of a sudden it's standing for something that it was never intended to stand for.
That's right. And also, you know, when we start to get into production or we start to bring ideas to the table, you know, it's important to have that alignment from the stakeholders to make sure mm-hmm. that we're telling the right story or we're approaching it the right way. And that really starts to build the foundation or a launch point from what we can execute from so that we can have a very, very laser focus on what that story is and what that idea is and making sure that it pays off and aligns with the vision.
Because part of that is to then get an agreement for the room of, okay, this is what we're aiming at, or this is how we see future us.
Yeah. So that's sort of the next level that we take into what we do when we start to make a film, whether it's, you know, a commercial or a film for social or whatever outlet that it might be, is that we want to make sure that it's telling that story, but that it's also paying off the brand attribute, and having that alignment for that, you know, is very critical. But along the way, we want to make sure that story continues to improve. And so we need to ask ourselves, does this decision make the story better? And if everyone's aligned about what the story needs to be, then we can all make that decision objectively and take some of the subjectivity off of the table.
Now, in advertising, there's a saying that it's not creative unless it sells. How much of this is kind of branding and art for art's sake, and how much of this is driving revenue to the bottom line?
We always aim to drive revenue to the bottom line. It's not always as quantitative as some folks would like to for it to be, because it's a longer...
Well, like the two guests prior, they do Facebook ads. They mm-hmm. spend a dollar, they get $1.50. It's like math.
That's right. And that is something that is absolutely quantitative, or you can measure. And with emotion, it's not so
right.
tangible, right? And so...
Or they may not buy today, but they may buy it in 6 months or a year, or they're going to remember that when it is time to buy.
That's right. And if you have a product that's a parity product, or it's a commodity, you know, having that emotional connection with a brand is going to give you an advantage. You know, if mm-hmm. if at the end of the day, you know, it's variations of the same product. If you feel emotionally aligned, or that brand is either adding value or has some of the same alignments, then, you know, you're more likely to go in that direction.
So now, how is it sold, your product? Is it like sold in like a big box store where I'm just going down and I'm saying, okay, I like this one, I don't like that one?
We do a little bit of that on the residential side, but the majority of our business is commercial, so it's specified through architects and designers.
So an architect has a bunch of choices.
Sure, they absolutely do. And so we want to, similar to what Matt was saying, we really want to be able to connect with them as a brand personality. So we're a brand that they believe in and they connect with, and we stand behind them. And it's a supportive relationship. So we don't want it to be transactional. We don't
right.
want it to just
so you
be
want to elevate
what
it.
They choose today. We really want to be there to be a full partner.
You want
to
be
them.
Top of mind. You want to be the go-to flooring solution for them.
That's right. Or any solution, right? So it has to, we believe that our brand has to transcend the product that we sell, mm-hmm. and it has to represent something bigger than that. Otherwise, it will always go back to being transactional.
So. And you don't want to battle in price.
That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. You want to elevate it differently than price.
Absolutely.
And if they care about price, then it's probably not a good fit for you.
Potentially. I mean, I think that there are some products in the line that might be a good fit if you have a price-driven consumer. Mm-hmm. But where we want to, and if you wanted to position your brand that, you know, as the lowest cost provider, then you could. For us, that wasn't our goal. You right. know, we were not positioning our brand as the lowest cost provider. We were positioning our brand as a partner. And we really wanted to convey who we were as a brand, to connect with people on that emotional level, not just sell a pretty product.
And then, so is the brand of the line different than the brand of the company, or is that a philosophical culture of the company, and that's typically the areas you sell in?
We've done both, actually. So we have products that carry the company brand name, and we also have products that carry kind of more of a strategic or product brand underneath the company umbrella brand. So we've gone through a migration where we used to have individual brand personalities for each one of those products, mm-hmm. and now we're moving to a more kind of strategic singular brand that drives the personality and who we are. And we may happen to launch products under various brands, but they all represent the same persona.
Now, Matt, for you, when you start working with a company like this and you start doing work that's really getting to the heart of what they believe and the why of what they do, does that impact the culture, or could it impact the culture of the company? Because once they see themselves this way, then they're like, we're this, not that. And now maybe I'm this type of worker, so I want to work for a company that believes what I believe. So it could help in recruiting. It could touch other areas than just selling one item.
It absolutely does. That,
and that's absolutely the goal. And that's part of the reason to have the importance of having the alignment throughout the organization, is because, you know, whatever that campaign idea is, or whatever that persona is we want that to be consistent, you know, from the culture internally, so that no matter where the end user experiences that, it's consistent, right? And so absolutely, that alignment is and sometimes it works both ways. Sometimes we come up with an idea and the organization can get behind it. Sometimes we have that insight and it becomes an internal campaign for the organization as well as the consumer facing aspect of it.
So now, how did you kind of get your career to this point here? Did you always start out in film or what was the initial?
I was in advertising here in Atlanta for 20 years. And started out as a designer and worked my way up.
From an art side?
Correct.
Not the copy side, more the art side?
Art and art direction, and then creative direction after that.
And then you got into filmmaking at some point, or you leveraged film during that path?
Yes, film was always my preferred medium. And when I started working with Ahsan Abbasi, who is now my business partner, we really had a lot of the same viewpoints about the power of film and the medium of film. And we worked really well together. And we said, you know what, we really want to focus on this. And so that is the leaping off point for us to start the company.
So now film, did you ever create your own films that weren't kind of advertising driven, that it was kind of a passion or?
We are in post-production now on a documentary that we shot in Nepal. The first couple months of this year, we were in Nepal for 21 days shooting a documentary called Blue Kangling, and we're in post-production on that currently.
So now the activity of doing a film or a documentary, how much different is it than doing an ad or an advertising campaign?
We employ the same steps, same techniques, same fundamentals of storytelling, and a lot of the same process. So even our presentations to our clients they look more like an EPK for a film than the typical agency, presentation of a concept.
And then, you were part of a larger firm and then you split off just to go down this path primarily?
That's right. Being in those larger organizations.
So you were a cog in a wheel.
That's exactly right. And seeing that the agencies through a lot of new business pitches, I found that we at the end of the day, we were pitching the process and we weren't pitching the product, which was the messaging. And mm-hmm. I saw an opportunity there to say, you know what, if we can have a great product and we can, that's what we do and that's what we focus on. Mousy and I were having a conversation earlier. The process shouldn't even be part of the conversation. That should be, sort of the cost of entry and not even in including your client in that, is added value. If you can just focus on the product and have a great story.
Right. It's like, what outcome do they desire and then deliver that? How it happens is less important, really.
Right. And less of the daily conversation and grind, right. On the relationship, because, you don't get mired down in the process.
Right. Because they're like, where's this? And it just becomes friction.
That's right.
And then we should all be focusing on what is the outcome.
That's right. And so we try to have each one of our touch points or milestones in the process is to have a tangible thing that we can look at. Once we get through the discovery phase, we get into the pre-production phase, and that's coming up with the ideas. And then we show you the ideas, and then we have a calendar, and then when to expect what.
Now, is it a challenge in that sometimes the client can't articulate the specifics of what they want? They know in general, but it's like the old saying of bring me a rock. A rock can be, a boulder. It could be a pebble. It can mean a lot of things to different people. Like, how do you kind of hone down into really the heart of what they're trying to accomplish?
That is by far the biggest challenge, because a lot of people don't know what they want.
Right. Like, I want a film. It's like, okay, well, a film could be a gazillion different things. And it means something different. And that's part of that exercise of bring me something tangible that, it symbolizes the meaning that you're trying to get at. So then at least you can get in the neighborhood.
That's right. We put so much emphasis on that discovery phase for that reason, because we want to get alignment. And sometimes, unfortunately we go through that and we decide, this isn't maybe what you're looking for isn't us. You might be looking for someone else who can make you a film. Because we've even done some competitive analysis to show clients like, look, kind of what you're asking for is exactly the same thing that everyone else is doing. And the opportunity here is for you to do something a little bit different and get into a white space and really, show how your brand is different and it's not just a commodity. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't,
But is that how you're choosing as your own agency to say, look, we only want to work with people who are looking for the white space. If you want to be the thing that everybody else does. That is not what we do. You go over there, go where I just left, because that's what they do.
That's exactly right. And that is the quest that we are on right now, is to find brands that know who they are or are open to discovering who they are, and really being able to put a fine point on that, because mm-hmm. that's really where we feel like you're going to get the best investment for your story, is to know who you are, you know?
So now how do you find those clients?
That's a million-dollar question. but we've actually worked a lot with, you know, just our network and people that we've worked with.
Because, like, you wouldn't, off the top of your head, if you were just starting from scratch, you're like, oh, well, probably a flooring company is probably where we should go first, right?
That's right. And sometimes they're in the, you know, in the strangest places. And also the size of the organization is important too. You know, it's the larger the organization, the harder it is.
It's too much bureaucracy and it's too complex of a sale. And all it takes is that one person that says no.
That's right.
And then there could be five people passionate about this as a solution, and the one person that writes a check.
That's exactly right.
It's too big of a risk for them to take.
That's exactly right. But we are confident that, you know, that our product speaks for itself, and it definitely works really hard. And, you know, the more projects that we do, the more momentum that we have.
Now, is there a typical point of entry, or do they have to go kind of big in order to use you guys? Is there like, hey, can you do a 1 minute thing or a 30 second to try you out, or like, how does that work?
Yeah, we can jump in pretty much anywhere as long as we agree to have the discovery conversation up front. You know, it doesn't have to be necessarily at the brand level. It can be a campaign. It can be a promotion. It can be, you know, it can be a 30-second film. It can be a 15-second film. It can be a feature-length film. We can run the same play, but the opportunity is to get in there and show them, you know, what our purpose is and what we're capable of doing, but doing the hard work for them to really put the stake in the ground for what they're trying to say.
And then, Mousy, for you, this has just been a really good collaboration in terms of efficiency, in terms of you efficiently getting what you need and only what you need, in a more affordable, I'm sure, and more probably direct manner than you were. It's less kind of bureaucracy and
exactly
making this happen.
And to your point earlier, when you were saying, you know, sometimes people don't know how to articulate who they want to be or what they're about, I think the more that you can have the creatives in the business, or the people who are really passionate about what they want their brand to be, speaking directly with the creatives.
Right, creative to creative.
That's right.
You probably have a better outcome than three middle managers.
Exactly.
And the accountant and the creative.
Every time somebody hears the information, it's understood through their lens.
Right.
And so every time it has to go through multiple lenses, it ends up being compromised in right. the end. So having that
or diluted just a little, you start losing a little bit of the spirit.
That's right.
And then by the end, you're like, you got the commodity output again. And right. that's why everybody's stuff looks the same, because it went through 50 different eyes and hands.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So this has been rewarding for you guys. You're getting the results and you're getting the stuff you're proud of.
Absolutely. You know, and I think you will, as long as you have an open mind. So I think that's really important too. So when you're working directly with somebody like Order and they're bringing you different concepts, sometimes they see things different than you do because you're exactly. so close to it. So it's really beneficial too, I think, when clients are able to have an open mind, because Order might be able to bring you an idea that you didn't ask for. So they're willing to do that. You know, they're willing
to
say,
well, you want them. That's part of what you're paying for, right?
We'll give you what you asked for, but we're also going to, you know,
push you a little bit.
And that's what you really want.
Right. And that's an important part of this. And you, as a client, for you, Matt, you need a client that's open to that. Because if they just want you to bring them back exactly what they want, they don't need you. Do it yourself, right?
That's exactly right.
You know, if you don't want my creativity, then find somebody else. Because that's my secret sauce. That's why we're here.
That's right. And our commitment is not, as you said before, art for art's sake. It's really telling the brand story and for us to come up with the idea that brings that to life in the best way. And that's what we pride ourselves on. We don't come into to say we want to be creative and give us an opportunity to show you how creative we are. It's all rooted in the strategy and the thing that we agreed that you wanted to say.
Right. Now, Mousy, the part of the challenge in creativity is that sometimes they're going to make big misses, right? You're going to take a chance. Like, that's part of pushing the envelope, is you might push a little too far.
Sure, but if you don't, you don't know where the edge is, right?
So you got to be willing to take that risk. It's a risk on both sides.
Yes, and sometimes, you know, we always like to say we fail fast, you know, and you learn from that and you celebrate your failures, because if you never fail, then you weren't taking enough risks.
And that's probably a good marker for you, Matt, for companies. If they don't believe that, then forget it. They're not going to be a good fit. Because if you only want what works for sure, forget it. There's nothing that works for sure.
Absolutely. Or there are other, you know, production companies or organizations that are happy to deliver that for you.
All right, Mousy, if somebody wants to learn more about your firm, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
They can visit us at tarquettena.com.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And Matt, if somebody wants to get a hold of you at Order, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Our website is a great one. It's Order Disruption. It's ORDER-DISRUPTION.com.
And you are looking for clients that want to kind of go for it.
That's right. We're looking for clients who want to make an emotional connection through the conventions of great storytelling.
And then it's any industry? You work with any industry, or is it primarily certain industries right now?
It's all over the board. We have experience in a lot of different industries. So,
and is it B2B, B2C, both, either? Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. If you have a story to tell, we can figure out how to do it.
And that's order-disruption.com?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff, Matt. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you very much for having us.
All right. This is Lee Cantor with Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.